celebrating, dancing, singing, chanting with drums, guitars, or whatever. And I see people putting their bodies into it. I'm like, that is basically the best thing I can see that humans do on this planet. Now, I've traveled everywhere, seen it all. But when I see people dancing in celebration, doesn't matter what they're chanting, actually, in a sense, ultimately, in a way. But when I see them doing that, I'm like, that's pretty much the best thing. When people are moving their bodies and singing and clapping and the children are there. But Kirtan is just really takes that to town.
You know what I mean? The nth degree.
That's it. Kirtan just milks that. It's like, hey, everyone, welcome.
Yeah.
And let's do it. And if you don't want to chant along, you just want to relish and meditate and go for it. And, you know, even Oprah's waking up to mantras these days. You know, she wakes up and switches playing on the mantras.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of For Soul's Sake, a podcast which aims to give you holistic, honest, authentic, candid conversation on spirituality, wellness, Ayurveda, and everything in between. I'm joined by amazing guests every single week, and I'm so, so, so grateful that you've come back to listen, learn, and grow with us again. Today, we have an icon of the Kirtan world, of the Bhakti world, someone who I genuinely look up to, someone who I genuinely respect for being tireless in his endeavor to share Kirtan and mantra to all audiences far and wide, none other than Vijay Krishna. A little bit about Vijay. He actually was born to the sound of his father singing Om Namah Shivaya on his guitar. He was initiated into Bhakti Yoga at the age of 12. Vijay Krishna is the driving force behind the Kirtaniyas, a transcontinental Kirtan collective. He's also the founder of Shriam Records, which presents world beat ceremonial chant music. And I cannot say thank you enough for the time you've taken to be with us. Thank you so much, Vijay.
Thanks for having me here, Radhika.
deep honor and privilege. And I'm feeling very, very grateful for, just getting straight in, stuck into all things mantra, bhakti, and kirtan. Mm-hmm. You've become, let's call it what it is, an icon of the kirtan world. A lot of people do look up to you in the world of kirtan as someone who is, exactly like I said in the intro, tireless in your endeavor to share mantra, to share bhakti with people. And I'm sure that that brings a lot of spotlight to your life. It brings a lot of, people wanting to follow what you do. Does that make you feel uncomfortable? How do you kind of like navigate people just constantly wanting to, be associated with you because of name and fame, let's call it.
Well, I feel like appreciation that comes my way actually so much inspires my further dedication to what I'm doing. It's almost like confirmation that what I'm doing seems to be having somewhat of a positive effect. I feel, therefore, that I'm making my small contribution into the world, doing my part. You know, and it can be a lot, you know, especially like in India.
Yeah,
a lot of families are really switched on to our music, and there's children that can't go to sleep without listening to some of our devotional chant music. And it's a lot, and bless my child. And I'm like, well,
that's far out.
It's a lot, you know, but again, it's a reminder that okay, like what my teachers and my, you know, my inspirations have told me, and the way they've inspired me, is very much like what I'm meant to do. At first, I think, you know, as a teenager, I had a crisis of being kind of like academically just not so into it always. I did okay at school, but
yeah,
I always had an interesting journey being removed from England about 11 years old. I went to Spain for 3 years.
Wow.
Learned 2 new languages, but then kind of missed out on like a chunk of like my English, went right back into the year 9. And then when I was 17, first year in sixth form, pretty much, I was just over it. I thought, let me go to India and get some real education. And I, you know, was, exposed to the kirtan culture, the devotional culture of bhakti yoga. And that's what I wanted to do. But at some point, I was like, what will I do with my life? I don't want to go and get a job and work for somebody else's time with my time. And, you know, and I'd seen my, you know, teacher and someone like Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, and being great adventurers also, and such an inspiration to me. And so, I feel like everything that comes at me as far as appreciation is really just like, yes, you're doing the right thing. You know, sometimes it's a question for me. I have no base. I'm always moving forward and forward. And every time I step on a plane, not really knowing what's going to happen on the other side, it's an extra, like, you know, opening my capacity, my spectrum, and even furthering my dedication to what I love to do. So that's what I like to do with it, instead of like say it's me. No, I don't. I very much feel like I'm just trying to do a savor and do something in the world, you know. You know, that's it.
Yeah, I mean, it takes a lot of courage and a lot of bravery, but also, like, just hearing it gives me a little anxiety, you know. Like, imagine getting on a plane and not knowing what the other side's going to throw at you. Or, you know, getting on a plane and saying, yeah, I'm going to go and present Kirtan, not knowing whether it's going to be received in a way that you maybe envisage. And something that I've noticed about you is you're not really so attached to how it's going to happen. You just do your thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, whether it's received this way or that way, you just do your thing.
Yeah, yeah. I've been kind of been making a point to be the one that will go where no other Kirtan singer wants to go.
Yep.
You know, a little bit the likes of Burning Man and certain places in the world where there may be either, you know, one might call hedonistic culture, or there might be like pseudo spirituality or whatever.
Yeah.
That certain more traditional or orthodox or not so into it Kirtan leaders, they would just won't go, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A friend of ours, Jayutal, came back from a festival in North America once and said, oh, never again will I go there. And when he said that to me on stage one day, I thought, I'll go there. Kirtaniers will go there. Let's go. We'll make them dance. Wow. We'll have a chant with them.
Wow.
So that's been part of my thing too. And yeah, going to the likes of like Google and chanting with some of the top people there, and with the yoglas through my friend Gopi Kalayal.
Mm-hmm.
And just seeing the appreciation from like a massive spectrum, going to the Avanti school here in London. I've done Kirtan with the kids there, and then, you know, an orphanage or a widow's ashram in India, and then Google, and then, you know, Byron Bay, Australia, and kind of where else? Where's it coming, you know? And I'm willing to just go there and do it.
Has that come at a sacrifice to some of the things that like people call home comforts, like having a stable home or like a family?
Yeah, certainly.
That's a sacrifice, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Mom might even say getting real, as we'd like to keep it on the
podcast. Yeah, let's keep it real.
Yeah. Probably even like my marriage probably fell apart because of my dedication to it too.
Wow.
The beauty is that, I mean, the person I was married to, Saraswati, the mother of the band, Kirtaniers, we're still friends.
Right.
We still go on these amazing missions together.
That's far out.
We're going to be fulfilling this gig and envision. Kirtan brought us together. You know, so we met under that auspices, and even though the marriage didn't work out, it didn't mean the kirtan had to stop.
Wow.
You know, so we really managed to keep that friendship and dedication to what we both know is very good for the world, that sometimes requires a lot of dedication and a lot of sacrifice. So, yeah, there you go.
Do you want that? Is it a desire for one day, okay, I've done my traveling now?
I do ask myself that, you know. I do.
I can
again,
imagine.
Like, yeah, I mean, you know, I see some of the, you know, certain communities have, you know, what we call swamis, and their life is completely dedicated and sacrificed really for the community.
Yeah.
Really, if we want to kind of simplify it, swamis are basically like giving up their own interest to really go and serve the rest of the community, the householders, the children, the monasteries, and all that kind of stuff. And when I really think forward to like my older age, would I be more interested in traveling around the world and sharing spiritual teachings, whatever I've learned from my gurus, and the environment and the world and life, and sharing kirtan in that way? Or would I rather just go to the mountains in India near the sacred river and really relish the practice of devotion? Do you know what I mean? It's like almost like right now, my younger age, I'm doing that and almost making some sort of sacrifice. But do I want to continue doing that forever? Or do I want to go and really, really relish the depth of what this beautiful path of devotion has to offer one day?
Yeah, you almost have to kind of make space for both, you know, like,
yeah, certainly.
The year has to be divided up into time for sharing, time for me, time for
indeed,
sharing, time for me.
Indeed, yeah, yeah. Something George Harrison said, quote, I think he once said in an interview, something along the lines of, you know, maybe one has to be selfish first to be selfless.
Wow.
And I think that selfishness isn't like in a bad way. It's more like, okay, well, when I wake up in the morning, for me practically, if I do my sadhana, this spiritual practice, and align and tune into my mission and my spirituality, my connection, and my purpose. That is that selfishness in a sense. And then I can be selfless. In the evening, I can go out and do a program. I can do a kirtan. I can, you know, do the thing that my life's dedicated to.
Mm.
But it's almost like I've got to have that morning time, that quality time.
100%.
Quality time for myself that might look selfish because I'm doing my own thing, but then I go and try and give whatever I can to the world in the evening kind of thing, you know?
I feel you. It's something that, you know, once one of my mentors told me, do you go a day without brushing your teeth? And I said, no.
Right.
So he's like, why are you going out into the world with a stinky soul? I was like, oop.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I'm not doing anything about
absolutely
the inner stench that pervades. You know, people can tell when something's being presented with a deep grounding in spiritual practices and when it's kind of just been given as a musical performance. And I think people can definitely tell more and more. I'm noticing it more and more now. People are a lot more switched on because before, I think kirtan was, and maybe you can correct me because you've been around way longer than I have, that before kirtan was only attractive for like hippies, really, like people that were on the peripheries of yoga, on the extreme ends of yoga. And now, like you said, you're performing at Google, sharing at Burning Man, which is a mainstream musical festival.
Got a request from Anthony Robbins and his wife too to come and do kirtan with them. And
I mean, this is what I mean. You know,
it's a whole spectrum of society. Yeah. You know, it can be useful everywhere. Yeah. The chant music. Devotional, and there's many different ways to call out, and I'm actually really, really for that. I'm not like into like only chant this mantra or only these names of God. That's kind of like the old history way. That's the old generation, you know. The new generation, if we can appreciate that when people of different faiths are in a devotional spirit, and whatever name they call out to the divine or whatever way they want to communicate with the divine, if we can appreciate that as a sacred space, and realize that actually at the time of prayer and sacred time for the people, there's no fighting. It's a very practical thing.
Yeah,
when people are bowing down and repeating the name of God, or when people are doing it on their rosary, or when people do it through the streets clapping their hands, there's, you know, it's peace actually, or there's no fighting going on there. Generally, it's people working together through sound, through rhythm. You know, the young children can come, the elders can be there too. And so that's how I see chant.
Very exciting time.
Yeah, it is. And what to speak of the power of mantras and the names of the divine. And I've been thinking very much about this hallowed be thy name thing. And I think it's relevant for all the different paths and people of faith of different, you know.
Yeah.
And I love it when atheists are enjoying the kirtan too.
Me too.
Love it.
Yeah, I almost want to ask it on a Friday night in kirtan. Anyone atheistic out there? Yeah. You're in the right place, my friend. Don't worry, you're accepted. Come as you are.
Indeed.
Don't worry about trying to conform to the way that we dress, the way that we eat. No, you just come as you are. Hear the sound vibration.
Yeah.
Chant with us. Maybe dance with us.
Indeed.
And then see what happens at the end of the night. And see don't be afraid to go all the way, because the truth anyway lies beyond it. You know, so don't be afraid. Like, don't be scared to explore your spirituality, even if it's through the medium of chanting mantra.
Yeah, indeed. That's what I appreciate about your presentation too. It didn't come with some of the baggage that previous generations of sharing a culture of devotion, or the different yogas, or the different amazing things that come from the culture. You know, we can just come, be as we are, and give it a chant, you know. Yeah.
And this is something that maybe we can get into, because, you know, there is a stigma attached to different people from the bhakti scene who come from, in one sense, slightly different paths, like different lineages in one sense. I don't see us as different. Mm. But, you know, there is that kind of, and people do start going, oh, you know, the conservatives among our community will go, oh, like, why, what's wrong with our existing community? Why do you need to invite people from, in one sense, from another lineage or another sampradaya, we call it, another
heritage.
That's the right word. And that's something that I've very clearly from the beginning said, that I don't want to carry the baggage of previous generations. I'd rather form relationships with people and see for myself whether, you know, and I genuinely really appreciate you, and I genuinely really appreciate your spiritual teacher, and I genuinely appreciate all of your friends. I have no stigma attached to any of that stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that that's something that's coming, that we don't, like you said, we don't have to hang on to the baggage of the past.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. Indeed.
You've experienced that a lot?
I think so, yeah. Again, doing kirtan in so many different places, and like you said a few minutes ago about like kirtan somewhat being associated with more of a like hippie kind of vibe. And
yeah,
in a sense, yeah, I mean, if we look back to the, you know, the bit of the history of like the kirtan starting off in a sense really in the East Village in New York, 66, technically... Some of the first people doing kirtan in New York in the 60s were actually beatniks. And the beatniks were kind of like the cool, older generation to the hippies.
Mm.
The hippies looked up to the beatniks, who were kind of like jazzy and kind of, you know, people like Bob Dylan. And, you know, they were kind of like the cool, older batch that the hippies kind of somewhat looked up to.
Aspired to.
Yeah. So, and yeah, I mean, when it caught on in the 60s and... throughout Haight Ashbury, that was kind of like the hippie lot that came like just before the 70s. But then we've seen kirtan very, very much happening throughout like rainbow gatherings also, where people are kind of multi-faith. Let's get together on some land somewhere and cook and chant both songs of in English, Spanish, and some kirtans. And and then I've seen what we call the medicine scene come up over the last 20 years.
Yeah.
Starting from California and then into the England
the
a lot.
The cacao age.
The cacao age, and kirtan has become such a great partnership with cacao. It's very popular now. Yeah. And for other ceremonies too, actually, being out in Mexico and Guatemala, seeing how kirtan can kind of find its place.
You pronounce that so well.
Guatemala, yeah. I grew up in Barcelona.
Okay, cool.
So I kind of got my bit of Spanish.
Yeah, yeah.
It was interesting living out there. Yeah, indeed. It's interesting living out there, and just sharing kirtan in strange places.
Yeah, I'm slowly seeing that there's an ease among people of the mass general public. You don't have to be at all associated with yoga, at all associated with anything ceremonial.
Mm-hmm.
You can still drop into kirtan, and that's been quite exciting, I think. Do you have a kind of vision for the future? Do you see where it's going? Do you see like in the next maybe year, 5 years, 10 years, where you think kirtan could... Is there a limit to where it could go?
Or
a vision for what you see for the future?
Because
you've seen way more than I have, so.
Well, I'm going to say that I don't think it's far off for the likes of you and I, within our lifetime, to see kirtan going on in stadiums.
I think so.
How about kirtan at Wembley Stadium? Like, and sold out, and people coming in and celebrating. That are from all walks of life, different colored people, different faiths, coming for a chant dance experience. And if not someone like you and myself and some of our other friends, maybe our kids or our other extended nephews and nieces.
But in our lifetime,
that's what I also want to be part of serving.
Mm.
That one day that, you know, kirtan will be on the radio. And we're grateful now that just last year, they added a chant music into the New
genre.
Age Grammy section. Yeah. So chant music is becoming, you know, it's on the map now. Watch out, everybody. Chant music is coming for you. And the mantras are from the ancient world, and they're very, very powerful. And they're programmed to react to nature itself, not only our inner world nature, but also nature. There's definitely an effect when the mantras, you know, are sung and done together with the community, with the music. And so I think it can go really far. I think it can be on the radio. I think that, you know, there'll be multiple Netflix and et cetera documentaries on different people that are sharing, you know, chant and music, you know.
If you work for Netflix, by the way, anyone that's listened to this, if you know a connection, holla.
Let's go.
Let's do this. Kirtan on Netflix would be epic.
Yeah.
If you heard the word Wembley Stadium and got a little bit excited, then just share this with a friend. Share this conversation
with
a friend.
Let's go Wembley.
Just say, look, these guys want to do Wembley Stadium. How can we make it happen?
Yeah.
Let's sell it out.
That's it. Really?
You know? Yeah. I used to think that those kind of things were far-fetched, but in the space of just 1.5 to 2 years of sharing kirtan and mantra, I found that my life has... Yeah, it's expanded in so many ways that I never dreamt of. If you look on the surface, I'm a chubby Indian bloke from good old London. And somehow or the other, because of the process of something that's well beyond me, I've been carried to a different life, almost like pushed into a different life.
Yeah.
And I just don't think these kind of dreams are far-fetched anymore. I just don't think it's like...
Right.
You know, when someone used to say Wembley Stadium Kirtan, be like, yeah, it's baloney.
Right, absolutely. Yeah,
but
yeah.
I can see something is coming. It's like almost a wave of transcendental thought that's not done simply just on sentiment.
Right.
It's not just, I feel Kirtan is great. No, we're seeing it actually objectively grow and people taking to the process and finding that that's their daily practice.
Yeah.
One thing that I'm always curious about is how do you feel about social, what's the word? Cultural appropriation. Because like, you know, I grew up in an Indian body and in one sense that gives me, in one sense, stupidly, people think that that means that I'm authentic because right. just on the color of my skin. I don't think that's completely true because you were also from a young age, very much adopting the process of bhakti. Yeah. Any thoughts? Mm.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, cultural appropriation came to mind yesterday. I was thinking about it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, strangely. And I felt like I had to look more closely into the definition for what I was thinking. Well, cultural appropriation isn't someone from a different culture doing the likes of kirtan or hosting a ceremony or whatever from another culture. Cultural appropriation considerations might come into hand when someone's maybe wearing a skirt with alms on it that's below their waist, for instance, and
right.
not really aware of like, hey, well, someone that is, you know, has a cultural, you know, value for the om symbol, seeing it below the waist, for instance. But I don't know if that's necessarily cultural appropriation, but I'm totally into cross-culturalism, if that's a thing. But I mean, I'm so mixed up. I'm, you know, one grandfather from the Caribbean, another grandfather from Ireland.
Really?
Yeah.
How far out?
Yeah. So then one grandmother from England, and another grandmother with, you know, anything from Swedish to Romanian blood.
Oh,
so
wow.
I'm really mixed up. And I mean, what am I supposed to do? I'm supposed to like, am I supposed to do what white people do? What
yeah.
brown people do? What, I mean, like,
Caribbean
people do? I like, I'm just, and I grew up with, you know, my father's approach to yoga.
Mm-hmm.
And again, he got started with transcendental meditation, actually, TM with Mahesh Yogi in the late 70s. Didn't meet Mahesh Yogi, but got into, again, chanting Om Namah Shivaya. And
okay.
he was kind of on the crossover with, not crossover, but he was, Shiva and Krishna were kind of part of my dad's meditation around the time I was born and conceived and whatever. So it was kind of like checking both out, checking the transcendental meditation system for Mahesh Yogi, but also looking into Bhakti Yoga also and the books of Swami Prabhupada before I was born. And both my parents had been going to the temple before I was born. And
your parents are disciples of Prabhupada?
No. They came just after. My dad, a few years later.
In the 80s?
In the 80s, yeah. So we joined at a hard time.
Yeah, that's
in
a super
sense,
hard
just
time.
After the guru was, you know, taking care of everything. And,
mm.
But yeah, he stuck with it. And my mom had her own way of appreciating, you know, the culture of devotion, bhakti. And my dad had his own way. And but neither myself or any of my brothers and sisters were ever forced into it in any way. And
are any of your brothers and sisters now like bhakti yogis practicing?
Not or? As such, no, okay. Not at all. They've all got names from the guru and
from your spiritual teacher.
Yeah,
cool.
from our teacher when they were young, they got named by him, and
wow.
they've had, you know, they know what it's about. But I think they're just living life right now, you know.
Fine.
And I think that's cool. My dad and my mother. My mother's passed on now, but she's fully deaf. Yeah, it was during my trip to Mexico a year and 3 months ago.
Oh, so recently?
Yeah, it was pretty recently. Wow. It just kind of happened. But that was a big heart opener for me. And
how so?
If you
don't mind.
No, absolutely. Yeah. Why not? Bittersweet, in a sense. I think, of course, the natural feeling of loss. It's just, you know, you lose a mother, you know, all of us kind of feel that,
yeah.
you know, not being able to see her anymore, maybe things we had to say to each other. But
you
I
were
do
in
know,
Mexico at the time.
I was in Mexico at the time, the other side of the
imagine.
World, and she was here in
was
Canada.
Was it during COVID time?
Yeah, it was. And
wow.
yeah, it kind of, my brother said, hey, have you heard from mom? And I said, well, no, I haven't actually in about 4 or 5 days. I was a good boy. I used to call my mom every day or two.
Wow.
Just hang out with her and talk. And we actually had some really good conversations, the last ones, you know. But anyway, it came as a surprise. My brother delivered the message and said, look, Mum trained us for this already. Mum used to say scary things like, oh, when I'm gone, just take care of my body, cremate me, and I'll move on to my next adventure.
Wow.
So my mum was given this ancient wisdom in a very, very natural mother way, saying, look, don't worry about who I am. My body, just take care of it, and I'll be going on onwards. Now, I really liked that. It very much resonated hearing it from my mother, but it wasn't like coming from the other side of the education that I also appreciated, which was like just Bhagavad Gita wisdom, that was saying the same thing. Basically, look, your soul is eternal. Mm-hmm. The true, you know, when we say I, we point to ourselves, and it's the mystics say that the true self, the consciousness, the soul, lives more or less in the heart. And the mystics and Krishna himself in this Bhagavad Gita epic is saying, yeah, that thing called, we call a soul, actually, even though it's bound paradoxically by a material body, the soul can adventures on. And it was always there and it always will be there. So this kind of thing that life goes on, which is one of my mother's mantras, she used to say life goes on.
Wow.
So she had us quite mentally prepared for it, even though we were very young, and she's saying, yeah, just take care of my body. And you know, but I think also with the discipline coming from living in, you know, an ashram and with spiritual teachers, and hearing it also coming from the ancient text, the ancient wisdom, so powerful.
Mm.
And I think that chapter 2 Bhagavad Gita is good for absolutely everyone, anywhere, in any religion, actually, as a reminder that, look, your soul, who you are, is eternal, infinite, you know, and going through a human experience, and but it lives on and it evolves. That's what evolution is, really. It's of the soul moving through its adventures and finding its zenith, you know, hopefully.
Wow.
So I think it was bittersweet, kind of basically, with my mom. Bitter naturally because of that sense of loss, but sweet because of just, not, you know, all this knowledge, not only what my mom had told me about, okay, the soul lives on, but also hearing it from the scriptures and from the teachers. But it was something now that I felt.
Right.
You know, in our culture, we say, we call 7 to 11 days after the departure of a loved one, we call it the Shraddha. And the Shraddha means the faith. And I'd seen this ceremony before with people that, okay, someone's mother had passed on, they'd hold a Shraddha ceremony just to honor that soul and their journey onwards. And I realized that the Shraddha, the faith, isn't just a ceremony, but it's actually this experience of having faith that that soul, you know, is going to be living on, you know. So it came really down to a matter of faith for me. Very powerful. You know, it wasn't up in the head. It wasn't like, oh, yeah, I've got this knowledge, the soul and all this stuff.
It's applicable.
It was like, whoa, I can feel my mom's soul is now been set free, loose, onto her next journey, you know.
That's the human experience.
Yeah, the human experience.
I'm so glad that you mentioned the second chapter of the Gita. And yeah, for sure, if the listeners don't have a copy of the Bhagavad Gita, Amazon it, pick up a copy.
Mm-hmm.
Second chapter is great for understanding the eternal nature of the self. And yeah, that, you know, eventually this body, like a piece of clothing, gets discarded, and then you move on to the next piece.
That's it.
And even though it sounds like we're minimizing it, and maybe it seems insensitive, but I guess it's kind of, I don't think there's anywhere else that I know of that teaches on how to die.
You know, right.
The process of how to die in a spiritual way. With what vision do we understand death? And maybe, yeah, I shouldn't have stereotyped that and said that this is the only way. But I found that it's quite clear, and the Bhagavad Gita is quite clear in its approach on death.
Yeah, indeed.
And the passing of the soul, transmigration of the soul between bodies.
Yeah.
Definitely interesting.
Yeah, it's solid. It's solid information and really worth everyone's consideration. Let's put it like that, literally just have a look at that, what's been said there, and just, you know, consider it. Yeah. Simple as that.
If you see us anywhere in the world, you see Vijay Krishna, just ask him. So I had a question about the second chapter, and then put us to the test whether we know it as well.
Right, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I used to enjoy kind of memorizing some of the Sanskrit.
Oh, really?
The ancient language. It's really far out.
Any particular favorite verse?
I often like Lucky 108, which is chapter 10, 8, verse 8. Aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvitaha. So this is really kind of bold, out there statement by Krishna. It's
hold on to your seats, people.
Yeah, it's kind of in your face. And I mean, I was once asked to kind of speak in this massive kind of assembly with all these amazing yogis, International Yoga Festival, Rishikesh. And I had no idea that the Swamiji was basically saying, Vijay, come and speak in front of this massive crowd, 25 cameras, 7 sets of private police with all these big Swamis. I'm like, he literally said, in 1 minute, you're going to speak. And I was like, what am I going to say? And he said, say something about yoga. So I thought, okay. And I came up with this verse, 10:08. So, aham sarvasya prabhavoh. Krishna is basically saying, like, everything is emanating from me. Mata sarvam pravartate. I am sourcing everything. He kind of reaffirms it and says, look, I'm just, like, taking care of everything. Iti matva bhajante mam. Those who know this worship me, heartfelt worship me. Buddha, like Lord Buddha, means intelligence. Bhava means with emotions and sentiments and feeling. Samanvitaha, and with everything they have. And this message, again, isn't just like specific, you know.
Not we just have, for Krishna Bhakti people.
Right. Mm. So this, let's take it like the divine himself or herself or whatever concept of the source that you have is saying, look, this is all kind of going on and being sourced from me.
Mm.
And the way to kind of know it, the approach it is, again, through the intelligence that's been purified and through good old-fashioned human emotion, you know? And I see that, you know, when it could just bring it back to the kirtan and the celebration and that emotion, that when I see, you know, video footage or when I'm in real life and I see people from different cultures around the world celebrating, dancing, singing, chanting with drums, guitars or whatever, and I see people putting their bodies into it, I'm like, that is basically the best thing I can see that humans do on this planet. Now, I've traveled everywhere, seen it all, but when I see people dancing in celebration, doesn't matter what they're chanting, actually, in a sense, ultimately, in a way, but when I see them doing that, I'm like, that's pretty much the best thing. When people moving their bodies and singing and clapping and the children are there, and but kirtan is just really takes that to town.
You know what I mean? The nth degree.
That's it. Kirtan just milks that. It's like, hey, everyone, welcome.
Yeah.
And let's do it. And if you don't want to chant along, you just want to relish and meditate and go for it. And, you know, even Oprah's waking up to mantras these days. You know, she wakes up and switches playing on the mantras.
Even I saw there was an article in The Sun. I know The Sun's an interesting newspaper, I know. But it was on the front cover. It said, Harry Krishna.
Yeah.
Prince Harry apparently listens to David Pramal.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, when he's doing this. I mean, I think it was, I can't remember the context. I think it was when they were giving birth to their recent child and Meghan put on David Pramal. And so they're just like, yeah, is Harry a Hare Krishna?
That's it. Great.
Who knows? Kirtan at Buckingham Palace.
Indeed. Wow.
I'm calling you, mate, because I ain't got a bloody clue what I'm going to do if they call me to Buckingham Palace.
Oh, come on, you can handle it.
I don't think so. Kaylee, you're coming with me.
That's it. Okay, Kaylee's on it.
Yeah. Talking about streaming and, you know, nowadays we're both getting killed by Spotify, let's call it.
Mm.
And all the streaming services, they're basically killing us off by taking a massive cut of the music market. What's your feelings on it?
Yeah, well, even though I have my preferences and on certain platforms and whatnot, I'm a little bit peeved with some of the especially Spotify a little bit. I mean, I just want to show some appreciation somewhat to like the iTunes kind of scene in my own way. We've been releasing Kirtaniya stuff there for 10 years now. I'm just saying that the fact that one can go and buy that track through iTunes, you know, it's great for the artist. And then over to YouTube, I love YouTube. I watch it a lot. I'm very grateful, but you know, for what they give us for 0.3, 0.4 million pennies, views a month is a little low.
Pennies.
And partly due to that is why I haven't been able to provide more content to even YouTube too. I'll be bringing more business in a sense if the royalties were a bit more balanced out and reasonable. Honestly, I would be able to, you know, be able to come up with a funding for a lot more really good music, musical video projects that have done really well and made millions of views.
Yeah.
But it's a bit slow on it. I think if they want to help us sustain creating things, it would help if they were a bit more generous in our shares.
Totally agree. Generally, agree more.
Right? Is it not? So let's see. There'll be another step, because, I mean, we saw it go from, when we were kids, we saw it go from like cassette tape to CD to Napster for a minute. We
could, I remember Napster.
There you go. Mm. So that was a crisis for the music industry. Then Spotify jumped in there with this supposedly kind of semi-genius idea.
Mm. You know, not same thing, just repackaged.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So there'll be the next thing. There will be the next thing. Spotify is just this area right now, but there'll be something else somehow. I'm not sure what and how, but, you know, the music will continue to flow.
One hopes. Generous donors.
Yeah. And, shout out to those who are supporting, you know, any kind of, you know, grassroots independent musicianship, and gratitude to the artists that are getting ripped off by their labels and having to give a whole massive cut to them. And gratitude for your creativity. And I am one of the opinion that all arts in a way are sacred, you know. So appreciation to all the artists that aren't really getting their fair share. Big love to you guys. Keep it coming,
big
guys.
Love.
Keep trooping.
Keep trooping.
And come on, Spotify, YouTube.
Come
guys,
on.
Man.
Come on.
Yeah, indeed.
I'm going to leave the space open. Anything you want to talk about, we can talk about anything under the sun. Because I've been directing the combo.
Yeah.
And I'm trying this new thing where we're shifting halfway through, or like even three quarters of the way through, something that's on your mind that you want to talk about.
Something that's on my mind.
Could be a question, could be a thought, could be anything at all.
Indeed, what's been on my mind? I don't know, really. I think I've been on my journey.
Too much traveling.
A lot of traveling. Also kind of like really looking at like what I've got going on in my life, and always in a sense considering like those sacrifices we were talking about earlier on. And
that must be a big burden on your head, man.
It's a lot. It's really like, whoa, I'm really traveling the road less traveled quite a bit, you know.
It's living a renounced life without the orange cloth.
Yeah, exactly. I don't get that support from the community. I don't have private sponsors or funding from a society or anything like
that's
that.
Hard.
You know? Doing
hard.
It really grassroots. And I feel a little bit, you know, I feel like a little bit.
Does that frustrate you, by the way?
Frustrate me? Not necessarily. I do feel a little bit let down sometimes that there's like not more support for it, honestly.
Mm.
But I'm also, I just troop on, you know. I really just, I'm going to do it anyway, you know.
It'll be the biggest tragedy in the world if you ever decided to stop, I think.
Well, yeah, I just can't. Yeah. I'd go down on the battlefield with this one, for sure.
With this one?
Yeah. I'd do it again in the next life, too,
really,
if I have to come back. Why not?
Sure.
No, I really see, you know, and again, I have so much appreciation for any other people that are doing it. And that's part of what I do, too, is to stand for, you know, in a sense, being a rep of that. Like, you can do kirtan and it will take care of you. Whether you travel around the world nonstop like me, or whether you've got a strong base in like the likes of London, where you and Kelly have been holding down really nice events and whatnot, your team. So I'm serving that a lot. I'm serving, and in the sense of, like, if I see other people being fire keepers, as I like to call it, keeping the fire for the community to come together, you know, and sing and chant and have these nice experiences together. So I'm very much really, you know, out for that too. Yeah. And if I meet someone along the way, I'm like, hey, you can do this too. I will let them know, really straight up, you know. Share kirtan in any way.
Yeah. Do you have any, like, I wish this wasn't going on in the kirtan world?
Honestly, I feel on myself as a mercy case, which means like the mercy is beautiful. Actually, it's not something we have to be like, you know, mercy is something that and something great has been shared. And some people might say, oh, those lot shouldn't be doing kirtan because they don't have the right conception. Those guys shouldn't be doing kirtan because they believe that or something else, or have strange habits. No, no, not at all. Like, I'm into, you know, I'm very much of the opinion that no matter who you are, no matter what you do, you can do this.
Wow.
You know, despite whatever good, bad habits or approaches or conceptions or whatever. I know atheist kirtan leaders.
Wow.
Sure. I've got a friend in, at least she was an atheist in Las Vegas, and she used to invite kirtaniers out there.
I think I know her. Anyway, we won't say.
Right, yeah.
I did kirtan in that same place.
She just does kirtan. She's good at it, and she actually has feeling. And she might just be playing along with that she's an atheist, or it doesn't really matter, but the point is she does it. So, I'm kind of into just everyone please do it. Let's do it. And let's have
We've got Wembley Stadium to pack up, man. It's going to take more than just me and you.
Oh, that's right. You know? Yeah, yeah.
So let's do it. Anything that you'd say to like someone that's new to kirtan, or like, you know, a budding kirtan leader, or someone that wants to facilitate more kirtan experiences, anything that you'd say, this is something you should try and explore, or like maybe this training, or, you know, what would be your kind of words of wisdom and advice for that person?
I've learned from, you know, the Navanga kind of, we've heard of Ashtanga yoga. Bhakti has Navanga, 9 limbs or 9 aspects. And the first aspect of devotion is actually receiving through hearing. We call Shravanam. And then we have Kirtanam, which means kirtan or chanting after. So I feel like one of the best ways I can encourage anyone to do kirtan is actually to listen to kirtan, to hear kirtan, to have it playing in their homes when they're cooking, or in your car when you're driving around, and really receive that, receive the moods of good quality kirtan. And even if we're listening to whatever, different kind of kirtan that is aesthetically pleasing, so we can learn and serve with kirtan ourselves. So I'm really into encouraging people to listen. Someone comes to me and says, hey, I want to learn kirtan and harmonium and mridanga drum. And I'll say, well, sometimes I might say, well, how many hours of kirtan do you listen to a day?
Powerful. Wow.
You know, if it's less than 3, I'm a little bit like, well, if you really want to learn kirtan, you'd be listening to 3 hours a day. And I'm not saying that that's a prerequisite. I'm just saying that if we want to learn kirtan, let's get involved in listening to it, singing along, and feel fully encouraged to come up with your own melodies. You know, I've come up with melodies in the shower or on a plane as I'm passing out, or really feel free to kind of,
express yourself.
Yeah, I'm really into that no hard and fast rules that Swami Prabhupada emphasized, you know.
Yeah.
It really is a no hard and fast rules thing. So how are we going to start stacking rules on it? It's really for the people.
Yeah.
You know, such a simple thing to
listen more.
Yeah. So I'm kind of into, I would encourage everyone to do kirtan and everyone to take a look at it, you know. And if you're really into getting more into it, then play it, listen to it, watch it on YouTube. I'm such a YouTuber.
Really?
Yeah. Like,
I had to get YouTube Premium for that exact reason.
Right.
So I used to get so fried out, that YouTube Premium. With YouTube, you get an ad every like 5 minutes.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Pisses me off.
Yeah, yeah.
So then I just was like, okay, fine, I'm paying for the Premium just so then I can listen to kirtan. It's like an hour long without the advert breaks in the middle.
Right. I've got a Google Chrome ad block.
Oh, man.
It just went right to the video. Thanks.
Someone should send that to me.
I'll send you the link.
Anyone that knows? Okay. Well, I'm sorry, don't worry.
Well, I'm surprised. I mean, our Kirtanese YouTube channel's done so well.
Right.
And I'm thinking, well, come on, YouTube. Well, just give us the premium. Let us be part of the
thing. Making money off us.
I had one of my Google employee friends ask me, how's your YouTube channel? How do you get your YouTube channel so poppin'?
Yeah.
I'm like, hang on a minute. You're the one that works at Google with YouTube. But I feel a little bit behind with that, honestly. I've really got to kind of catch up with
social media.
It's just like a whole thing. I kind of got over it about 6 years, 7 years into the band. I kind of got over being the one that's got to post to Facebook and YouTube.
Yeah, it's a whole job in itself, isn't it?
It's a lot, man. But I really have got like a nice stack of upcoming videos for our Kirtanese YouTube channel, and
cool.
Which I'm looking forward to kind of getting out of there. It's been such a labor of love.
I'm excited to see him.
Yeah, yeah, sure. Some funky ones. Again, some of the videos that we're releasing are very much emphasizing unity and diversity, beautiful, which is one of my favorite aspects of kirtan too. You know, that there's that sense of we are, in a sense, you know, all part of and parcel of the same divine thing. And yeah, when we sing together, and I feel like even a skeptic could walk into the likes of your kirtan, just walk into Om Nam and be like, see the vibe, and even a skeptic will be like, hey, well, I can't really argue with that.
Yeah,
you know, if they see people chanting and singing and
happy,
well, who's going to argue with that? It's just that's it. It's obviously generally a good thing, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
It's almost like, you know, sometimes even sharing in any programs, I might say, you know, we might walk into someone's birthday party. We might not know who they are.
Right.
We see a bunch of people celebrating around them, clapping and cheering them on. We generally, a lot of people would actually just smile at seeing such a sight of people celebrating someone else's birthday who they don't even know. So that is also one of the effects of chanting the kirtan and mantras. And even if we feel a bit silly sometimes or we're doing something strange, but actually if it inspires even a smile and in any sort of way goodwill towards this obviously peaceful, joyful process,
that's a good thing.
It's, you know, and again, we just want the world to be a better place, man. And kirtan is definitely, without a doubt, you know, a positive way towards that.
Beautiful.
100%.
I agree. I'm not going to argue with that. I mean, we're talking to two kirtan men here. It's like, we're not going to argue on much, are we?
That's it.
So
we signed up.
I want to close today with some quick fire questions.
Mm-hmm.
You up for that?
Sure.
All right. Hold on to your horses, people. Mm-hmm. It's going to be fun. Okay. What's something you're curious about right now? One sentence, one word. Something you're curious about right now.
Oh, I'm just going to have to say love.
Oy.
Sweet love. Curious, what is love?
You mean like the ultimate sense of love, or you mean like...
I don't know.
All right. I've got his number, people. Let me know. I can sort you out for a tidy fee. What's...
Get me out there.
Oh, no, that's terrible. What's something you're personally working through at the moment?
I think working through... Working through... I think as certain aspects of a level of discipline that I actually really, really enjoyed very, very much in my teenagehood. And now I'm just making certain things a routine part of my day and strengthening my routine, especially 2023. We all want to upgrade in different ways. And now I'm like, I'll wake up in the morning, I'll take care of my bathroom duties, and then right after that, no matter what, I'm going to set this level of quality time with me, myself, and the Most High.
Yeah.
And everything else can happen after that.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? A real dedication to that, because I feel scientifically the effects on my day.
Yeah.
If I wake up in the morning and just kind of don't have that quality time with myself, with my heart, with the divine, I feel like a chicken head for the rest of the day. It's chicken like a blessing head and a curse. Because when you receive that experience and you start even just meditating for 1.5 minutes a day, you feel the effects, but then you stop doing it, it's almost like, oh well, now I can't. So everything else in my day is like the second and third and fourth and fifth most important thing to do for me. That quality time again with myself, the divine, the great mystery of the divine, should be priority. And it kind of puts my head on. It's like we can wake up in the morning and switch the Wi-Fi on for ourselves, but we got to do it with our very self too, kind of connect. And then we can let our day go on. So one word, routine.
Yeah, it's something that, I mean, just seeing as we're gone down the caveat, it's something I'm definitely trying for this year. So I went through a period where I can chant. Like chanting for me, whether it be kirtan or my japa, on the beads I chant, that seems to be not... I don't want to say it's perfect, but I'm doing it. But one area I've always struggled with is opening the books. I just seem to always struggle with it. And so for the last, let's say, 6 months, I don't know, maybe it's been longer, I've made it a point that I just put my Kindle in a place that I just can see it. And if it's not, I've noticed, if it's in a different place, I forget to read that day. But I have to keep it in a place where I walk past it after I've showered. I have to see it. So the problem is now I've got a 2.5-year-old who just loves to move things around. So he's like, you'll see this, and just like move it over there, and then I forget to read that day.
Oh, I see.
So I'm trying, but it's definitely, you're right. I'm seeing a difference in, even if I'm reading in automatic mode, like even if I don't fully understand the concepts, then just to read it, and then at one point in the day, like it happened today, it just comes to my mind. I'm like, oh yeah, that was a nice point. Today's, anyway, I can go into the today's verse, but it'll be a whole sermon. Okay. What's your favorite thing about your music?
that everyone can take part.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's very accessible.
It is.
Yeah. What's one of the things that you wish you would improve in your offering?
I like to give even more of myself.
Oh, my.
I just give you
bro,
more.
You're doing too much already.
I'll give 108%. Is that possible?
I don't know. I don't know, man. If it is, then you're the one that's going to do it. Something people misunderstand about you.
I'm not as naughty as I look.
Oh, really? Oi, oi. We're going to have to test that one out. Okay. He's not as naughty as he looks. You don't look that mischievous, though.
No, no, I'm not.
No?
No.
I'm looking at Kaylee right now. He doesn't look that mischievous, does he? No, he's shaking with a grin on his face. And then the final one, if you could create one law, I don't even know why I'm asking a Kirtan person this. If you could create one law that everyone had to follow, what would it be?
I was going to say, like, think with your heart.
Think with your heart.
The law is to think with your heart, not your brain, not your head. Not
wow.
Love. You know, honestly, again, not to be cliche, but hey, that word is big.
Yeah.
That word is very big. And I think, you know, my teacher used to say, love is God and God is love.
Mm.
So again, for those who are like whatever God, even for those who are like whatever love, I think, no, love is real. Love is extremely powerful. So I'd probably like implement a bunch of laws that would facilitate and encourage people to love more. Mm. And again, unity and diversity. I appreciate your Muslim, Christian, Jewish, atheist brother, whatever color his skin, and sister.
Mm.
You know, these things really, I think we can do it as humanity. There's no need to fight anymore. There's some old battles going on over land that's been going for millenniums. Mm. There's no need.
No need. No need.
There's no need. Let them pray their way. We'll pray our way. And let's support each other like humanity, brother, sisterhood of the earth. There's a few things we do agree on, and actually all the cultures everywhere do agree on love.
Mm.
And it's not really trending to be an atheist anymore. It's not the 1990s, is it?
That time's over. It's now.
It's not even like atheism
we're
now.
In the age of Aquarius, aren't we?
Indeed. So. Yeah, and that age of Aquarius, me and a friend have been talking about that too, that I've heard it in certain circles. It's kind of how the transmission of knowledge, wisdom, it's going to be switching from this Piscean style into this more Aquarius out there, out of the box.
Are you an Aquarian, Ben Jones?
No, I'm a Leo. I love Aquarius.
I'm an Aquarius.
Oh, great. Great. Yeah.
I don't know what that means, but I'll take it.
Cool. No, Aquarius and Leo get on great for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, as a Leo, I just love like the out there-ness of Aquarius that can just be like all over. There's the universe.
That's me.
You know what I mean? It's good. Good. Cool. Good. Yeah.
Cool. Thank you. Thank you so much, Vijay, for your kind for being here, for being present, number one, but also for making this conversation really easy and accessible and relevant for people. And I hope that every single person that's listening or watching this has taken something away, taken maybe a few nuggets, maybe a few moments of inspiration away. And as always, feel permission to re-listen to this podcast. It's not just there for a one-time entertainment thrill, but hopefully there for you to re-listen to. And hopefully we can have Vijay Krishna back again. When you're next back in the UK, we'll pencil in for another podcast and we'll talk all things Kirtan once again.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this. Right,
this was good fun, no?
Yeah, it was. Good flow, man.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it. So to all of you, thank you all so much. And I'll see you on the next episode for Soul's Sake. Namaste.
Namaste. For Soul's Sake. For Soul's Sake.